Hey, hi everybody. This is Certified Life and Executive Business Coach, Dr. Nelson Beltajar, coming to you live from Toronto, Canada. And for those of you listening, I'm asking you to please buckle your seatbelts and get ready, because Aubrey is about to take you on the road to rediscovery with another great episode. Grab your favorite beverage, sit in your favorite room, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. My special guest is a suicide survivor and former tutor who has turned her near-death experience into a mission to transform lives. She's a learning success coach and the creator of the Holistic Neurogrowth Method, helping kids and parents heal with burnout, from burnout, overwhelming, and emotional disconnection. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Kohila Sivas to the show. Kohila, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh, thank you. We are equally excited to unpack this wonderful conversation. So, Kohila, can you start us off by walking us through your experience that was so pivotal to inspire you to do the work you're doing today?
Because as growing up as kids, we don't really, especially when I was growing up, we don't share our feelings, right? We weren't looking at feelings. We were just given a shelter and we were told to go to school and come back and do your work. You had, you had your own schedule that was built by your parents. And if there's anything was going wrong at school or with your life, there was no conversations. And especially when I grew up in a household with my dad being alcoholic, it was even further from what other people could experience at home, right, for me. So I was a newcomer to Canada at that time. I was learning the language as well. I decided to mute myself so that I don't get made fun of. So that was the first thing I did to protect myself. Then as I went on, things started happening to me. And then only person that I ever had conversation was by myself. It was my conversation. We all experience, we all have two voices, right? It feels like there's two people living in our head. One is giving us all the ways that everything is going to go wrong. And one might come in, argue with the other voice saying, oh, there is a chance that this might not go wrong. This might be, there's some positive in here. But the positive voice actually loses in that war as more and more negative things starts winning in your life. Mm-hmm. So at the age of 12, that's what I was doing. I was playing this inner mind game. Mm-hmm. At that time, I didn't know what I was doing. All I knew is that I was talking to myself a lot. And everything was internalized. And the adults around me did not feel it, did not see it, right? They didn't see me, they didn't hear me. So I started saying that I don't think I need to even exist. So that was kind of where it landed, right? So coming back from that, the day that I decided to end my life, I was in the hospital afterwards. I had the same conversation back again. It turned on again. There was a moment of silence, but then it came back up again because I woke up. In that conversation, my brain, the two sides of the brain, again, the conversations are happening, but this time it was happening from another perspective. The earlier perspective has been shifted. It's now telling me that, but what you have done has hurt your mom. She's crying, everybody loves you. But I didn't hear those words the day before. It told me that everybody hated me. There was a profound shift in the way brain was speaking to me. Right? Because there's things happening around me that's giving me evidence that people do care about me. So that's the day I really recognized the power of our mind, how much it can really screw us up. basically, right? Because the day before you were telling me everything opposite, and the day after I wake up and you're telling me all of this, making me feel like I did it all by myself. I didn't. You were guiding me.
Yeah.
Meaning my brain was guiding me to do what I did, right? So that was a wake-up call for me with the power mm-hmm. that we have with our brain. It always mm-hmm. validates what we say. If we say people do love us, it'll say, yes, they do. If I keep repeating people hate me, it's going to say, yes, it does. And it's going to provide me evidence in every other way to prove that.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I took from that experience. I went back. Of course, I was blessed with the life. It's not just me figuring that out. I was blessed by God to be here. And the purpose was for me to carry that message forward, that our minds can play tricks on us.
Yes.
Tell a story. It can validate the story like any other person, even mm-hmm. better than any lawyers. It can provide evidence after evidence.
Yeah.
But we have a choice, right? We have a choice to challenge that voice. At any moment, I have a choice. You have a choice. Every one of us have a choice. So I want to be part of that. So I came back into the classroom again, surviving that. I fell in love with math. I needed some kind of vehicle to really help me out. And that's when I fell in love with math. I started cracking the codes of math. It helped me as it was a therapy, because in life, I couldn't solve many problems. Everything mm-hmm. was a problem I didn't have answers to as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old. But whenever I sat with math problems, I spent the time, I could find answers. So that gave me confidence that I needed.
I see. And numbers are very factual. What you see is what you get with numbers, right? They don't lie. There's no gray area with numbers. And so for your fascination with math and feeling challenged with numbers and manipulating and managing the numbers in such a way to find those answers, that had to be very empowering for you, I would imagine, because you were able to find the answers, because they are numbers. They are plain and simple what they are. They don't lie. There's no gray areas, versus other problems, emotional problems, relationship problems that have so many different gray areas that are hard to control, hard to resolve, especially if you're by yourself. No one can solve problems in a vacuum as, relationship problems, at least. It takes a team, right? And it takes interacting with people. So the pivotal moment then, it sounds like, is where you realize in your heart of hearts and in your mind that you have a choice. You have a choice to challenge those thoughts, those debilitating, paralyzing thoughts that comes into your head about not mattering to anyone, or that you're the reason why these problems exist with your loved ones, and that everything is your fault. Would that be accurate? You realize that you do have a choice, and then you took action from there?
Yes, it was more of a power. We all have a mm-hmm. power within ourselves to narrate that story. Because I'm the creator of it. I am the person who narrates it, and then I provide evidence for it. So if I could provide the evidence, if there's a false information that's coming to my brain, into me, right mm-hmm. now somebody doesn't like me, I can say it and say it again. Oh yeah, they don't like me. And then I can make it into even bigger global by saying nobody likes me.
Yeah.
Right. Nobody likes me. And then I can keep saying that again and again. I will find evidence that people are doing things to me. Now I'm becoming a victim as the process goes on, right?
Yeah. And
it's snowballed. I've lost it.
Yes. Yes.
Lost it.
Yeah.
No control.
No control. Your control is lost. It snowballed into this big thing that in most cases may not even be true. You know?
It's not. It's normally, even if it's true, all I needed to do at that moment when that information came to me and say, that doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter if somebody doesn't like me, that's their choice.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me.
Yep.
What matters is me. I love myself.
Yes. Yes. Right? Yes. Yes. What you can control.
Exactly. And have I done them anything wrong? Then I would look at, have I done somebody something wrong for them to not to like me? If I have done nothing wrong, then I've done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. So I have no responsibility for them to not like me. That's their choice. It's not my choice. It's their choice. Right. I'm not going to change their choice. They can choose if they want to change their choice. But yes. I don't need to allow that to come into my life and say they're ruining my life. Nobody ruins our life unless we allow them to ruin our life.
Unless we allow them to, 100%. My goodness. Yeah. I mean, you know, it may be a cliche, but the term mind over matter is incredibly powerful, right? I mean, when it comes to things like the laws of attraction, you know, and the mindset that we have and the energy that we give, you know, whether we are intentional about it or if we aren't even thinking about the energy that we're giving, we're still giving energy, whether it's positive or negative, and that can have an impact on how the whole universe works, I believe, and the laws of attraction of what you do attract and what do you also detract and push away. And so, Kohila, I'd love it if you can help us connect the dots, okay, between your point of realization and having a choice in reclaiming your power, okay, and the elements in which you've encountered those things that weren't necessarily formally taught or given.
Yes. So first step was for me to realize that I have control over my mind. Mm-hmm. The power lies within me. And if anyone's listening to me, that's what first thing we all have to do. The power lies in us, not somebody else. The minute we say that, we give, it's almost like giving the key to somebody else and saying, I can't open the lock. It's exactly like that, because now you're locked, you're trapped, but no one's going to come get you because you handed the key. If you have the key, you have the choice to come out anytime you want. You just have to open it and you're out.
That's right.
But why do we give the key to someone else and say, they've taken it? No, I have to give it, because it, ownership of that power lies in my hand or someone else's hand, right? So we have to first for me, that was the powerful thing. I think that was what God wanted me to feel, so that I can face the rest of the things that was coming towards me in the life that I have now. So the next realization is the power of math. And when I found the power of math, and when I was able to crack the code of math, and I looked at how others are teaching math, and I found that, why is it being made complicated? There's an easy way. This is such a beautiful subject. It makes you feel good when you solve it. It gives you so much confidence. This should be even used as a therapy. In my mind, it should. I think one day I might go into that direction in creating a therapy through math, because it's beautiful. So I'm thinking that, and I'm sitting in classrooms and they're not delivering it that way. I said to myself, I want to become a teacher. I'm going to help other students feel this. Others feel this. And that's the best place to do it, as a teacher. So I started pursuing that after my graduation, but I didn't directly go into teaching. I was a teacher assistant. Then I started doing my tutoring business, and I wanted to become a teacher, and I started in the path and became a teacher. But unfortunately, in the classroom, there's just so many things going on that I started seeing the same students that I was years ago.
Right. Oh, I see. Yes.
The people that were like me, who were not...
Self-doubt, maybe even muted because they didn't want to be made fun of.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. I saw not desk and chairs. I saw people like me who are struggling like I was.
Wow.
So in that moment, I realized that pushing content and telling them that we need to perform, even though you're struggling underneath, but we got to get marks and grades and let's go to the next grade, felt a bit useless, because unless you have everything ready to go, if you tell somebody to go, you're just forcing them and pushing them and pulling them and carrying them and dragging them to finish line. That's not a finish that anyone wants to finish, right? That's not a finish. That's not a real finish. No. I started not liking the place I was doing, delivering this. I had started. So then I created this tutoring business where I really was coaching them. I always go back to this analogy of preparation before anything to be achieved, right? We have a preparation period. Like at school, as a teacher, we expect our students to come into the class ready to learn. It means they're in the state to learn. because learning is a state. So that means that all the preparation, their whole body, their systems, their brain is all turned on and ready to accelerate with the teacher at a speed for the content that we're bringing in. But unfortunately, that's not how we enter the classroom. Mm-mm. We carry all of our things that are happening to us, our environment, whatever we're coming from, we have incidences and we have conditions that are being applied to us. So we bring all of that to the classroom. So there's no preparation. So I always go back to a farmer. If he wants to harvest, the first step he does not put the seeds everywhere and say, let's start growing. That's not the first step. The first step is to clean up the yard, clean up the land, prepare the land, make sure the land is prepared. Then he plants the seeds. Then he waters and makes sure everything else is going right.
Yes.
So I look at teaching, tutoring, all of it like the same way. As a teacher, I need to prepare the land, which means the land of the mind. It's the soil. The mind soil needs to be prepared. Now we're not doing that. There's no preparation at all. We start as if they're ready to be planted.
I see. And so as a result, then the teaching in the classroom is not as effective.
It's a waste.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's so many deeper levels and layers of that person that needs to be shared and discussed and guided, and you know, almost like a therapy. You know, that's what it sounds like.
Yes. And if you think about it, how many of us were in classrooms either daydreaming, completely don't want to be in that classroom?
I was a daydreamer. Yeah.
I was too. Yeah. Yeah, I was too. Because that was my escape. Oh, wow. Therapy was to escape into my own daydreaming.
Yes.
Whatever I want to daydream about.
Yes.
So, and then if you're not fully focused, they say focus as if it's a commanded action. Focus is not a command. It's actually, you have to biologically, chemically, your body has to be ready to be in alignment to focus. Yes. Focus doesn't show up just because you yell at somebody, right?
It's not a light switch.
No, it's not that way. So our system currently, even up to this point, I hope to change it, we don't give the space for the readiness to learn. There's the prerequisite to learning. There's a prerequisite state to learning. Mm-hmm. And if we can allow that time of prerequisites to be done, the readiness to be implemented, all students can learn. All students can learn. But we don't have it. Most students struggle. Some students are okay. But most students, and now even worse than when I went to school, when you went to school, almost 99% of the students are struggling.
Yes, yes. That's what I've heard. My goodness. I mean, and, you know, with today's a different world, right? I mean, from the time we were young and went to school, there's so many different dynamics and elements that exist today that didn't when we were growing up. You know, I mean, the term cyberbullying didn't exist when I was in school. You know, social media didn't exist. You know, just a lot of different things. And so as often as kids or young people scroll, you know, even in the very minutes and seconds leading up to when class starts, as they're walking to the school, as they're walking up the steps, as they're walking in the hallway, you know, scrolling and scrolling, and obviously their mind is taking in this information. Mm-hmm. And then having to put it down, and now you're in the classroom, you sit down, focus. And to take and focus. Number one, the focus isn't a light switch. How can they switch quickly from the content they've been taking in the entire walk up to the classroom to now focusing in class? Instead of looking in a screen, you're looking in the classroom at real people, real objects, right? And who knows what emotional changes happened as they were taking in content leading up to the classroom. It could have been something that was funny, something that was sad, something that was threatening. You know, I mean, it's just so much. So let me ask you, after teaching, did you switch to independent tutoring or anything?
Yeah. Yeah, I did both. I did both, and then completely left everything 15 years ago. And just did my tutoring changed into coaching, because in tutoring, so let me explain the difference. In teaching, we are there to make sure the students are okay and to deliver a curriculum and to collect data and make sure that it's all there so that we can pass them to the next grade and next grade. So there is a measurement.
Yes.
There's a delivery and a safety. Safety, delivery, and then measurement. Mm-hmm. Equals school, right? That's a job of a teacher. So, and then if we go into tutoring, that's when you're struggling in classroom. So you come to the tutor to ask, can you help me with what I'm struggling?
Right.
So very much on the surface, and you might have a test tomorrow or you might have a test coming up and you just want somebody to help you.
Yeah.
Right? So they're right there.
Yeah.
So now that's okay if you know what you're doing and you're struggling with one content. That particular content or that particular week of content.
Right.
But if you're struggling overall holistically, mm-hmm. you have never done well in previous classrooms. Mm-hmm. You have now had a major shift in your life, any mm-hmm. shift. Mm-hmm. It could be a divorce from your parents, or it could be somebody you lost, you love, or a dog or a cat. Whatever significant events are happening in your life, now your readiness to learn has been... it's delayed. It's not there yet.
Right,
It's not even possible. It's like me saying, let's plant the seed. You can't. The land has to be prepared. So we need to bring the person to that preparation, through the preparation, so that they could be in the acceleration state where we're expecting them to focus and flow and pay attention and get things done. So when I was working with my students as a tutor, I started becoming like a person who was giving them answers. I would say, do this, show me. Okay, now you can do it. Do it again. Okay, now you can do it. Okay, go do it.
Yeah.
So there was no intrinsic motivation. They were not learning at the deeper level. They needed me the next day, because if something else shows up in a different way, they don't know how to manipulate that and figure that out. So I don't want people unable to figure themselves out later, because everything that we do in school, if we do it for the purpose of learning, it needs to give you confidence to solve something bigger next day.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So I don't want to be part of that plan where I give you something and you look for where's Kohila next day. That's not independent. I'm not producing independent thinker. I'm producing a dependent who's going to look for me.
Yes.
So that wasn't what I wanted to do either. I wanted to work with students who are hungry to learn, who are intrinsically motivated, who are like, after learning it, they're like, okay, could this be applied this way? Like, I want them to talk about it in an excitement.
Yeah.
Not as, okay, I memorized it, I'm going to go use it, and I'll come back for more if I need more of you, right? I don't want that relationship. So that's when I shifted to coaching, and I didn't even teach them math. Most of my students, I had hundreds of them sometimes. They would come to me with math problems. I would not work with math at the beginning. I would work with their preparation of their land, which is their soil, the mind soil. I would start working with them, and then I would then give them the math and say, can you do this on your own? Mm. And they were able to figure it out. By then, they were able to figure out. If there's a concept missing, I would, of course, explain that to them. But rest of the stuff, they have to do it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So when they do it and they achieve it, they're empowered and they're motivated to learn more and to go to the next level, right? Instead of just having been given the answer.
Yes.
To your point. Once they're given the answer and you give them something else the next day, they're asking, hey, where's Kohila? I can't do this without her. She helped me the last time. So that type of empowerment is wonderful. And it's the type of teaching I think that should occur. One of the questions I had though, Kohila, regarding this is when you change to tutoring as an independent tutor, isn't there any type of, I don't know, doesn't it lend itself to some degree of flexibility in terms of what you teach, the lesson plans you write, and that sort of thing, to maybe kind of include some of those things that can empower students?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. So I flipped it.
Gotcha,
they would come from, they would start at school and they would start failing or struggling. And then they will look for a tutor. That's the time they will meet me.
Yes. Right?
Then I was at the beginning stages. I didn't everybody learns, right, as we go through our journey. I also started tutoring because I was excited about math, but then I realized it's not the math they're having a problem, it's the preparation problem. So I flipped it so that I think now how I want the school system to be designed. It's just like farming. I want every teacher, everybody at school to first start with preparing the land. Get them, get the students go through awareness, alignment, and activation, activation of their system so that they could get into acceleration. At the stage of acceleration, then you deliver content, which is teaching. Now start delivering content. You're going to have such a great time delivering content. You're going to fly through those content with no problem because those kids are focused and in flow. If somebody is in flow, you can teach them anything you want because they want it.
That's right.
They want it.
That's right.
So at we're accelerating at the same level. At that acceleration, let's say they're struggling because of something they missed, then bring in a tutor to help them with the acceleration. Because at that level, you can ask the tutor, can you explain me how this concept works? And then he or she can explain it. Now we have more acceleration happening. Now with that acceleration, anybody can achieve. So that's what I did is I flipped it so that we don't start teaching or tutoring when we don't prepare the land. Forget about it.
Right.
Let's start preparing them. There's three stages in my program, which is awareness is everything. If you don't know what you're struggling with, what are we working with, right? No idea. So we got to become aware. Aware. Then we need to make sure we are aligning with that awareness. Alignment is the next in all aspects. And then we are made out of systems. These systems control us, right? We're a living being. So we need to know what systems are blocked, where those blocks are. We bring them alignment and we activate those systems to work with the environment that we're going to be working with. At that stage, you will enter flow. I teach them how to enter flow. In flow, you can focus and pay attention. Then we bring in the teaching and the content. Teach them anything you want. They're hungry to learn. You love teaching anybody at that stage. And then if there's some struggle, we bring in the exact tutor at that point to help them so that they can keep accelerating and even accelerate at a faster speed. Now they're achieving and they're so, so good at it that their confidence is going to grow. They'll be like, I can do this. I got this.
Ah, I see. And like you said, preparing the land, you know, this is your 5A formula.
Yeah, right? This is the framework I use in my coaching.
Love it. Yeah. This is wonderful. So one thing I'd love to get your thoughts on, Kohila, is personally, I'm a firm believer that while children are very impressionable, it's very important that we still have the ability to discipline, coach, and guide, right, without breaking their spirit. I truly believe in a children's spirit. We shouldn't break that spirit. And when listeners benefit, spirit I'm referring to is their spirit of curiosity, their spirit of challenging boundaries and things like that. So what are your thoughts on this in terms of the way you teach and coach?
Yeah. All children love structure. Because structure equals to any child, a structure equals they're protected.
That's right.
They have a firm ground that they can walk on, and they have a firm boundary that they can explore without keep wanting to check with someone. So that's why I say we're all born with our own soul. We are given our own soul, and I call it the soul print. We want to be able to express our own soul print.
Right.
But as children, we don't have the capacity to know all of the right things and all of the things that will hurt us. That is why for 18, 20 years, we are given the beautiful job to be their parents. Otherwise, we could just send them out into the real world and say, go figure it out, child, right? But we don't do that. As human, we take care of them for 18, 20 years so that they can truly develop fully. So in that time, we have as parents, as educators, as coaches, every one of us, every adult in this world has a responsibility to make sure that every child is protected. And they provide that safe boundary. Unfortunately, over the years, somehow, somewhere, we have lost that kids know better. Kids can safeguard them more than adults can. So a lot of the safety that was there as I even was growing up, I look back, it's no longer there. I used to play video game with my brother.
Yeah.
Nintendo, we played every day. And we would play, you know, we would play all holiday, all the time. But I only talked to my brother, though.
Right.
When I was playing, it was a game that was just between me and my brother, and that's it. But now, kids are playing games, and they're interacting with strangers of all ages.
They really are. It's unfortunate. And it's,
so where did we lose the safety?
It's scary.
How is that safe? How is that safe? I can act as anybody tonight. Yeah. There's an AI out there can do anything you want these days. So why are we not protecting our kids? Yeah, they're playing game. It's innocent. But they're talking. They have the ability to chat and talk with anyone they want.
Anyone. I mean, because they're connected to the world. And there are people out there who are not very pleasant people who understands this and use it as a breeding ground for you know, impersonating a child to connect with another and then do some very unmentionable things and say some very suggestive things that, again, is along the lines of breaking the child's spirit. And in the wrongest of ways.
I'm actually pissed off at adults that we have, our society has become.
Yes.
When did you think that a child can protect all of this? When did you think that they're okay to handle all of this? How can they handle? If somebody's acting nice at I'm a 9-year-old, I'm going to think he's nice. I'm not going to think anything but nice.
Right.
But he could be a killer. He could be wanting to kidnap me. He can be grooming. I have no idea. He's nice. No. He is saying nice things.
Right.
That's all I know. Because that's all my brain processes. Because my brain's not fully developed yet. That's why I live with my parents. And that's why I hope my parents and other adults around me will protect me.
With boundaries, with guidance, with discipline, all of these things.
These are good. When you discipline... Yeah. You do it in the right way. It's not hitting like we used to do it. That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
You do it in the right way.
Yes.
You guide them in the right way. You ground them in the right way. You are there for them in the right way by showing them that you have all of this limit to explore on your own. And when you hit that, ask me. I'm here for you. I'm waiting for you to ask me. I'll guide you the next way.
Absolutely. Right? And you're protecting their spirit when you do this.
Spirit, that. Yeah. Yes. That's what soul expression is. They need guidance. If you just let them go, you're telling them, I don't love you. I do not care for you. That is the message they get.
That's
and guess where they're going to go? Guess where they're going to go look for? The strangers who are acting to them as nice people.
Who really don't love them. Who really
them. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So this really pisses me off because somehow, somewhere along the way, and I was groomed as a child, so I know exactly how it feels. So I am so pissed off that we think kids can handle it and kids can take care of themselves. We have to, as adults, protect them.
Yes, we
That's
we
our
must.
Ultimate
we
job.
Yes.
All the children, not just my son. All sons and daughters needs to be protected. So I want 100%. All the, if anything, by the governments, I want them to implement like strict laws on people allowing to chat with our kids, strict laws on what they're watching.
Yes.
Like all of these were there and it's no longer there. So somewhere along the way, that's why we have all these 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds growing up so differently. They're losing their innocence so early.
Yeah, they are.
They are. I know because I lost it and I didn't have a childhood. I didn't have a teenage years. I was dealing with adult problems all my life. I still feel that I've lost years of my life to all of this. So I feel sorry for these kids who are going through now. I really do.
Wow. My goodness. Yeah. It's heartbreaking. It really is. And you have people like pedophiles and so forth out there and abductors, right? Yeah. And they're looking for these open areas, these gray areas where, you know, technology has really advanced, but there's no regulation against who can access what and who can access whom. So they take that and make it to their advantage in connecting with these children in a way that is highly, highly inappropriate, you know? And so I am right there with you, Kohila, in my emotional response to not just parents who think their children can handle this, but also, you know, just agencies who don't regulate this type of access, you know, to our children. You know, it's it's something that we as parents who care take very, very seriously. And so, speaking of parents who take, you know, parents who care, who take things seriously like this, such as you and I have to ask you this question. I'm not the type of person who like to bring up tragic events, but when it comes to teaching these days and children these days who must have mental health areas addressed, who must have emotional areas addressed. In my view, okay, I think that with school shootings, I'm going to go back to the day of Columbine, which happened in the 90s, okay? I can't help but think that there is some correlation between the frequency of school shootings by students and mental health, emotional distress, and these sorts of things. In your professional opinion, is there a correlation between the two? You know, because it's been quite frequent that school shootings have been happening by students, and I would argue even suicides.
Yeah, I believe that we've lost our family structure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It started as we don't sit on our dining table. You know how many hours parents would spend with their kids after school.
Human
after
interaction. Yes.
Chins. So then we started isolating ourselves into our rooms. Right. And the more we start isolating, our kids start isolating, we say, oh, he just don't want to be with me. He just don't want to be with me, or she doesn't want to be with me. Mm-hmm. But all teenagers don't want to be with us. My sons did the same thing. He didn't want to be with us. Who's 14 who wants to be with their mom or dad? Nobody.
Right. As a teenager.
I didn't either. Yeah. I didn't either. Right. We all do that because it's in sort of an independent move to move ourselves. Little isolated from our parents and stuff. It's a first move showing independence, right? Which is great.
Yes.
It's great. But that move doesn't equal you start letting them be that way 24/7 in the world that we live in today.
Exactly.
In the world that we live in today, because in that bedroom, you think your child is in your home in the bedroom.
Yeah.
In that bedroom, there's thousands and thousands of people coming and visiting them in a second.
Yes. Yes.
They're not alone.
From all over the world.
It's not the old world. It's all over the world.
Yeah.
And they're all type of people. In fact, criminals most of the time, because they're after our kids more than anyone else.
That's
so
right.
So you think they're there. Mm-hmm. You think they're isolating from you, but they are now isolated in a world that they may not be, shouldn't even be in.
Exactly.
So my son is 18 now. He started isolating. I still go into his room and say, let's have a chat. I want to talk to you.
Yeah. Right.
He says, Mom, leave me alone. I said, no. So if you want me to leave you alone right now, what time should I come back?
That's right.
Yes. So tell me a time. 2 hours later? Sure. 3 o'clock? Mm-hmm. I'll be back. I want to have a chat.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let's go out and have a chat. Let's go for a drive. In fact, let's go for a coffee and have a chat. But I'm going to have a chat with you. You just have to let me know a time. He never escaped from us not speaking to each other.
That is profound, absolutely profound, Kohila. And it also tells me that in your teaching, in your coaching, you know, you're not just coaching children, but parents as well. Yes. And coaching children through emotional trauma or issues and parents coaching them in how to interact together in managing through any type of mental health issues or any traumatic event. So you're helping them in interacting with each other.
Yes, we have a program called Parenting in Flow. We just finished our first live event in Scottsdale, Arizona. We have another one this weekend. That in fact is bringing parents into a live event space where they come without their children to learn how to really communicate.
Yes.
And that is being present and communicate. And even as they push us away, how to communicate and how to connect and how to be there to guide us, they're going to push us. All children should push you.
Yeah.
Push doesn't mean they don't want you. It's a way of them saying, if I push you, will you be there for me? Will you be there for me? They're
will
asking
you be there
that
for
question.
Me? That's
even
what
if
it
I
translates
push you.
To. Yes.
Yeah. That's their language. That's their love language. They're going to speak by pushing. You're just going to say, you're going to push me, but I'm going to ask you again, when can I meet you?
Yes.
Because you are my son or daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure you have everything, that I can be present for you.
Yes.
And I can talk to you in that conversation, even if they don't say it the first day, they might say, you know what, I've been talking to this person, and they've been saying, or they hide it all the way. You can see that they're hiding something, because kids have a hard time hiding things from us, right? Like my son
do.
Did things.
They
and
try.
As I was talking to him, he tried. And he said, Mom, it's so hard to hide from you. I'm just going to tell you the truth.
Yes.
because it's too hard to hide every day when we have conversation what he was trying to hide.
Oh, yeah. Plus, it gets exhausting for them. I mean, why go through the burn the energy of trying to hide it when we're going to find out anyway, right?
Yes.
So that's a lot of energy wasted. So you might as well just tell the truth.
Yeah, he told me. And then I helped
very
him.
Very logical of your son. Very logical.
Yeah. And then I only happened because I keep pushing. And whenever I went to him, he would push me out and he'd say, Mom, leave me alone. Of course, that's what teenagers do. Leave me alone.
Yep.
And
they sure do.
Mean, get out. Or they might say, can you leave me alone? Even the tone goes out. They hate it or use bad words.
Yeah.
So what? I'm going to return. Just tell me a time for us to have a conversation.
That's
so
right.
I can be here for you. I'm here for you. But
yes.
You don't have to push or you don't have to force it. You're just giving them a choice. You have given them a choice. You can. It's now or in 2 hours later, but it's going to happen sometime in between now and before you go to bed.
That's right. It's going to happen. And when you're saying, okay, tell me what other time can we talk or when can you talk next?
Choice.
You know, you're basically saying to them, I'm going to ask again because I'm your parent. I love you. I want to connect with you. And I'm not going to let the outside world taint your mind with all the influence that the world has and that the people in this world have, criminals that can get to you emotionally from outside the world while you are up there alone in your room. The mind can go to some very dark places when you're by yourself in your room as a teenager. And, you know, Kohila, as the old saying goes, right? At least this is what I was, how I grew up. I was told this. An idle mind is the devil's workshop. And what that means is if your mind is idle and you don't have anything that you're working on or thinking about or any goals that you're achieving, it's just an idle mind. That's a workshop for the devil to like just get in your head and to convince you, hey, go try this or go try that, where it could do some damage to yourself or someone, you know?
Yes.
So, idle mind.
So going back to your question about shooting and stuff, I think I think by having regular conversation, even daily conversation, having daily family time that is dedicated family time.
Yes.
And even if you're watching in or listening and saying, you know what, my family's gone too far, because that's what I get. Sometimes parents always tell me, oh, yeah, this is all works. If I have a new baby, I'll start doing this. But what about I have a teenager who's like 16 who's going to just tell me to, you know, go find something, right?
Right.
So, It still works. It still works because presence, like 100% presence and saying that I'm here for you.
Yeah.
It's a deep love that we shared with our kids from the beginning of the days.
Maybe
you've lost. Yeah. Maybe you've lost it in the couple of years of bad timing or whatever.
Yeah.
But when you go back to it, you can find it again. It's like finding the rhythm. It's like tuning an instrument.
Yes.
You can go back and find the pulse and you can connect again. So if you're saying my child has gone too far, no, they have not gone too far. You can bring them back. You can get in alignment with them. All you need to do is start being presence for them. Like be there for them. Undividedly be there for them. Show them that I love you no matter what. Whatever you have done, whatever you have said, I'm here for you. How can I help you? And if you start feeling that in your nervous system, it's energy, right? If you start feeling that energy is going to go already speaking for you. Words are just after the fact. First is the energy. If you go with anger, if you go with resentment, if you go with I failed as a parent, that energy is not going to serve you when you go to speak
to
them.
Not at all. Not at all. The victim. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you go with, you know what? I've done things wrong. I want to make this right. Let's start today. And let's make it right. I'm here for you. I'm ready to listen. I'm ready to talk to you. I'm going to give you undivided attention. That means no phones, nothing. Undivided attention to have conversation with your kids again, to start again.
100%. And be intentional, right?
Yes.
gotta be intentional because they are going to say, leave me alone. Get out of my room.
Or even worse, right?
Using bad words and such. So being intentional means you're being persistent, you know. And so that's all of that is very important.
We can guide our kids back. You can guide
we
your
can.
Kids back. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. It's always
amazing
possible.
Insight. We truly can. So Kohila, I must ask you this question point blank. And if you choose to decline in answering, I totally understand, given your background in education. But I need to know, okay, do you think the education industry is willing or would be willing to rethink conventional curriculum and reshape it? Why or why not?
I think you know, if you have a store, right? If you're a store owner, if you're not selling day after day after day, you open a store. Let's say you have a clothing store. You open day after day. You're opening. You're consistently opening. Great. Yeah. You're showing up. You're consistently showing up. And you're figuring out, okay, this is not selling. I'm going to get more merchandise here, more stuff here and there. Mm-hmm. Your store looks beautiful, but no one's still coming. And even if they come, they're not buying it.
Right.
Will you continue to do this for another 20 years the same way? Your store is going to explode with the items because it's not selling. No, your customers are not. Something is off with the customers, right? Your expectation and the customers are not in alignment anymore.
Not at all.
This huge problem. You can't ignore it. It's exactly what's happening in our education system. The customers I'm talking about is our students.
Yes.
Who we serve in that building is our students. Our students have rejected learning so long ago.
Yeah.
Now we have trapped them in a building called school, and that feels prison for them.
Yeah.
Now it has become a zoo. It's actually a zoo, and they are behaving.
Yeah.
And some of these behaviors are displaying behaviors of animals in a zoo, captive zoo. Mm. Now we call them behavior, and we're figuring out how to figure out what to do with the behaviors that were never even displayed in the past history.
Right.
And the teachers are trying desperately without being hurt and hit and pulled to figure out how to deal with behaviors they've never seen in human children.
Wow.
So as I said before, that example, you're not going to put more display of new stuff thinking this customer is going to buy. This customer is pissed off. This customer is not ready to buy anymore.
No.
What we call curriculum. So this customer needs something new, which is our students. I've always said, students are the one who's going to tear apart the system.
Yep.
Even if you don't fix it, they will tear it apart and bring it down because now we can't deal with. Like yesterday, I was talking to a principal. She said they had 7 people sent to hospital, ripped, bitten, kicked.
Oh my gosh. Really?
8 children running around the school, 3 evacuations from the classroom. We have behaviors that are unbelievable. And it's not the fault of the kids.
No.
Kids are not to be blamed. They are kids.
Right.
They're kids. Mm-hmm. They remain kids. It's not their fault. Their nervous system, their systems are off, and we're not providing the prerequisites for them to be ready to learn. And we're pushing content. Until we push content, they will fight back with behaviors that you have never seen in your life.
Oh my gosh. Wow, they will. And you'd be amazed at some of these behaviors make you kind of scratch your head and think, where'd they get this from? Well, they got it from the bad influences around in the world, right?
Yeah.
And our, or the parents, I won't say inability, but the parents' unwillingness to guide and direct them in a loving way, you know? Yes. So,
and they're off in many ways. They're off mentally, mm-hmm. they're off because of what they're consuming.
Yes.
With the technology and the digital world,
yes.
they're chemically they're off with what they're consuming.
Yes, they are.
And eating.
Mm-hmm.
So we have attacked our system, this living system, in many aspects, many, 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 many ways. So it's not one problem anymore. It is a accumulated problem of many, many, many things,
mm-hmm.
including the falling of the structure of family and the guidance of parents. They have let this a little loose and call it gentle parenting. I love gentle parenting. But gentle parenting doesn't ground your kids. They don't give them the guidance. They don't give them a safety barrier to like explore. They're told I don't loved. It's basically it's or overwhelmingly loved means they become helpless and hopeless.
They do. And they don't have that foundation. You know, they don't have that foundation, the emotional foundation, the mental foundation, you know, and you have so eloquently and graciously articulated the importance of having that will from there be a springboard to their learning from an academic standpoint, right? Could be a springboard to their learning to where they feel empowerment to and bravery to grow and learn on their own further based off what was provided for them foundationally.
First is safety. If your nervous system doesn't feel safety, you can't do anything. So it's the first question to ask yourself is does my child have a proper safety nervous system? Are they running safely?
Yes.
If they're off, they're going to have behaviors of all sorts, and then we have to deal with it. So that's where the school will fall, and then we will have to figure out how we're going to deal with behaviors, because that's what we go to. We do the behaviors in multiple different ways.
Yes.
And then they all fail because dealing with behaviors at the behavior level will always fail because we haven't got to the root cause of it yet.
That's exactly right. And you've clearly broke that down for us here in this conversation. So Kohila, I have to really, really thank you for just your points of clarification and how you have articulated the foundational needs, for children. They need boundaries. They need to feel like they're safe. Okay. But at the same time, not having their spirit broken, having the guidance and the direction and the discipline in a loving way that makes them feel safe. And also, balancing a little latitude to where they feel empowered to venture out in a safe space up to a safe degree so they can grow incrementally. They can develop what's needed for them to handle life as they should handle it appropriately in their adult years. Kohila, this has been an absolute wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
Very loving, very delightful. How can the listeners connect with you and learn more about the great work that you're doing?
I'm all over the space of online space. I'm Kohila Sivas everywhere on any social media. You can reach out to me with anything you want to ask me related to education, parenting, or coaching, because I do certified coaches under this methodology as well. We have over 300 plus coaches now all around the United States and in some other parts of the world. So if you want to become one or want to use any of our services, or just ask questions. We have a lot of free workshops. It doesn't have to be paid. I provide lots of free stuff so that every parent has access to it. If you pay or not. You have access to me free. If you want to talk about your child or gone too far, that's the thing I hear now is our family's gone too far. No family's gone too far. It's just a matter of, adjusting and becoming in alignment with who you are. And that expression you talked about is I talk about it as a soul print, right? We're all here to express our soul.
Yes.
And we might not have yet, but that's exactly possible and available, and it's the birthright for every one of us to live our soul print and express that. So reach out to me, any social media, or our website is holisticsuccesscodes.com with the W. Holisticsuccesscodes.com is my website. Otherwise, on all social media, they can reach out.
Oh, fantastic. We're going to have that website, web address, and the social media handles all over the episode show notes so that the listeners can click and learn more about your great work, learn more about your methodologies and your formula while listening to this wonderful conversation. For the listeners' benefit, for those of you who are parents, you heard it here first. Your family is within reach. No one is so far out of touch to where you can't bring the family unit back together. It's still within reach, which means there's hope. There's still hope. Yes. Kohila Sivas, thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope we can stay in touch and bring you on the show maybe in the future.
Yes. We are going to serve a lot of people. We just declared 1.5 billion humans by 2035.
Wow, that's amazing.
Because I believe, like you said, there's hope. And without hope, there's nothing, right? Faith. Yeah. Faith is everything, right? We're not gone too far anywhere. No. We can reclaim it.
Yes, we certainly can. Hope and faith is definitely, definitely there. And it's always there. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may think in your daily struggles and adversities that that there's no hope. But hope is always around the corner, and we're never alone in our struggles. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. The Road to Rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution, and guess what? You are now part of it. We're all just roadies on this journey of life, and it feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have. The Road to Rediscovery is an AJ Shark production.